Chapter 2 has noted the attempt since 1999 of religious conservatives to cloak their side's environmental and energy policy, hitherto largely a matter of property rights, tax incentives, and minimal regulation, in a theology more sophisticated than the brusque Christian Reconstructionist demands for the abolition of the EPA and true believer statements about Genesis 1:28 empowering developers to bring forth the earth's mineral fruits. Organizations such as the Interfaith Council for Environmental Stewardship, ICES, and the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty have enlisted a fair amount of conservative religious and corporate support for preparing what amounts to a pro-business, pro-development explanation of Christian stewardship. The Acton Institute, aided over several years by ExxonMobil, for some time published the Environmental Stewardship Review, given to emphasizing market mechanisms and private property rights. Besides endorsing corporate and development-oriented positions, Acton condemned supposed environmental extremists theologically. The Institute's director, Roman Catholic Father Robert A. Sirico, contends that left-tilting environmentalism is idolatrous in its substitution of nature for God, giving the Christian environmental movement a perhaps unconscious pagan nature. In 2005, a group of theological moderates and liberals convened by the National Council of Churches issued a statement, "God's Earth is Sacred," that indicted the conservative credo as a false gospel, that our human calling is to exploit Earth for our own ends alone. One participant, Father Charles Bender, an Orthodox priest, contended that some people say the environment doesn't matter because the second coming of Christ will end the world as we know it. But he called that view the height of arrogance, because each person will have to stand before God and account for his actions. Although few political office holders are involved in this debate, it suggests how theology is imposing itself on, or becoming a necessary appendage to, more and more elements of national policymaking. Then there is the subject matter of business, economics, and wealth, where the tendency of the Christian right is to oppose regulation and justify wealth and relative laissez-faire, tipping its hat to the upper income and corporate portions of the Republican coalition. Christian Reconstructionists go even further, abandoning most economic regulation in order to prepare the moral framework for God's return. These extremes obviously represent instances of theology, biblical interpretations and priorities, trumping what most would regard as practicality and self-interest. The last arena of theological influence, almost as important as sex, birth, and mortality, involves American foreign policy, bringing us to the connections among the War on Terror, the Rapture, the End Times, Armageddon, and the thinly disguised U.S. crusade against radical Islam. Here, the 43rd president has often coded his remarks to heighten biblical resonance for believers listening for it. A related and important practice, at least an apparent one, is the blurring or avoiding of positions that might contradict the worldview promoted by fundamentalist preachers, inasmuch as senior officials cannot explicitly endorse it. National opinion surveys and the priorities expressed since the late 1970s by church, religious right, and Republican grassroots organizations give precedence to the life and death, sex and family issues over any others. Endless confrontations have arisen over abortion, women's rights, assisted death and the right to die, the promotion of sexual abstinence, contraception, and the question of gay marriage. The spur is the scriptural belief patterns that significantly influence 60-65% of Americans and appear to dominate the views of roughly half that number. Viewpoints on these issues closely reflect the influence of religious denominations, not just religiosity in general. By 2006, more than a half dozen life and death issues, from a vegetative patient's right to die and stem cell research to the question of crimes against fetuses, were grouped in a face-off involving medical and biotechnological criteria and intense theological pressure from religious conservatives to define life, or the right to life, as beginning under the most remote and attenuated circumstances. Conflicting federal and state judicial rulings and legislation on abortion only multiplied the confusion, and the related battle over the use of embryos for stem cell research became incendiary. Citing his reverence for life, George W. Bush blocked federally supported embryonic stem cell research on all but a dozen or so existing cell lines, close to a de facto prohibition. In the House of Representatives, Republican Majority Leader DeLay, a Texan proponent of a biblical worldview, castigated stem cell research that used blastocysts, early embryos of only 100 or so cells, as the dismemberment of living, distinct human beings. That belief prevails among Republican core voters, but the overall electorate, and many elected Republicans, supported stem cell research in order to advance medical and scientific discovery.